Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Talent Game podcast. I'm your host, Joe Burridge, and with me today is Amir Satvat. Welcome to the podcast, Amir.
Thank you so much, Joe. No, you know, we've been friends for such a long time, and it's great to be chatting, and especially in this format, to just have a great conversation today.
I must say, I'm smiling from ear to ear here because, it's great to have you on. And in fact, this is actually the first time ever we've talked on a video call or something like that. So many messages and comments back and forth on social. So it's great to actually chat and, really looking forward to diving into that. So, but for everyone else, I've got carried away with myself there. For everyone else who may not have any idea who you are, please go ahead and introduce yourself.
Oh, of course. So I am a business development director at Tencent Games, formerly at Amazon Games before this, and I've been in the games industry for about 5 years, got into it relatively late. But many in your audience might know me a lot better as the founder and leader of Amir Satvat's games community, which, you know, is a very active community across LinkedIn, Discord, Blue Sky, and our website in helping people find roles. We've helped over 3,000 people find roles in the games industry. It's an all-free effort that I do aside from my job. And I guess besides that, I have, you know, my wife and three wonderful boys and live in the town of Farmington, Connecticut, 5 minutes walking from the home I grew up in.
Yeah, that's great. Hey, we've got quite a few similarities here, more than I realized. So I'm also moved back. I'm back close to my hometown as well. I also have three kids, but I have three girls. So all in, we're all in each on one gender, which is quite funny. And you have doing such a fantastic job with this community, putting out content, just trying to, especially the last 2 years where layoffs have been crazy. Like you've been really trying to rally at least resources and job posts and everything else, trying to help with that. And I love that mission of just trying to help people out. And this is a wonderful industry going through hard times. So and I was going to say, awesome work on the Game Changer Award at the Game Awards as well.
Oh, thank you so much, Joe. No, you know, I think what really means a lot to me, most of all from that award, is knowing that increasingly people believe that the type of work that you, me, and so many of our peers in this community of helpers do is something that is worthy of discussion and of being recognized. And I think it's so cool because I remember back a few years ago where folks like you and me in a much smaller number were doing it. But I feel like now so many more, I think, have had the confidence to jump in as well. And the more people that are helping, the better results we get.
Yeah, because before we started recording, we were talking about like this getting into the games industry for both of us was dream job territory, right? And it's like, okay, well, why would we not try and help other people do the same, just live their best lives? So, nice work. But before we get into that story of how you got into the games industry, I'd love to hear what are you playing right now.
Yeah, you know, it's always fun in January because it's a little bit of grab bag plus like mop up time. I usually go back from like game of the year stuff that I like didn't play enough of or I want to like finish out. So like I'm going back and playing more of Balatro because I feel like I didn't get enough of it. I'm going back and playing like Wukong again. I'm going back and playing Metaphor Refantasio again. And then mixed into that is often just totally random crap. Like I'm replaying Skyrim for the umpteenth time because I like missed it and wanted to play it. Or like I'm going to pick up Donkey Kong Country Returns in HD because that's coming out on Switch tomorrow. So January is grab back month. How about you?
Yeah. Oh, great. I'm actually playing through Sifu at the moment. You know, the martial arts Unreal Engine game. And the reason why I started playing that was because of the Secret Level series on Prime. So, which is the animated shorts, and I had one of that. And I was like, oh yeah, that's been sat in my downloads list for way too long. I'm gonna actually get on with that.
Sifu's really cool. I love that mechanic where you age up in it. That was really unique.
Yeah, Yeah. I just the character animation is great, and also the studio, which is going to escape my brain. They announced a football, well, soccer game for the Americans here, called Rematch, and I was like, oh, that makes sense. They did such an amazing job with the character animation and how it translates perhaps to sports. It's going to be interesting to see. So
that's cool.
We'll see. Nice.
That's cool.
Yeah, and also my New Year's resolution, as always in January, is to complete the games I already own. So finishing off Baldur's Gate 3 is going to be right up there.
The backlog, man. The backlog is impossible. I think I calculated based upon the Social Security Administration, it's going to be like a head-to-head race of whether I finish my backlog or die first. This is going to be close. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, especially when it's like, oh yeah, I must complete my backlog, but I'm dying to dive back into Skyrim again for right. So it's like, oh yeah, okay, I'll do that then. Yeah, so it's replaying old games plus new games. Yeah. Cool. So let's get back into how you got into the games industry. I'd love to hear that story, because everybody always has a unique story of how they get into the games industry. There's no one true path, so I'd love to hear yours.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, what's interesting about me is, you know, I've loved games since I was three years old, and we had an Atari, and I played Asteroids with my parents, my grandparents. And as I got older, you know, I knew what like a job was and had some semblance of an idea that you could work in games by, you know, late middle school, high school. That's kind of what I wanted to do as I was finishing university. And there were opportunities, but at the time, anything that I could find would have meant moving to the West Coast of the United States. And this is obviously a very personal decision that's different for everybody. But for me, this was a non-starter, because I come from a very tight-knit family. I'm an only child. I come from a very tight-knit, also Iranian community here in the Northeast, in Connecticut and so forth. So I was never going to move to the West Coast. So because of mainly that reason, even though there were opportunities, I couldn't take them. And so I kind of committed myself that I would never give up on that goal, but I would just keep building up skills and keep quietly in the background applying. And I kept doing this and kept doing this. So between then and age 35, I was basically doing jobs for a while. I was in graduate school and applying to stuff, but I didn't really meet anybody in the industry. And as well, I'm sure talk about plenty later, this is part of how kind of the community and resources came about, because it can be easy to be like, oh, just talk to people in the industry. But as unfathomable as this may be for your audience, I didn't know, you know, it's not something that's intuitive sometimes to know what to do. So finally at 35, I was like, you know what? I should probably just start trying to meet some people in the industry. So I started meeting some of the early friends that I often talk about on social, like Craig Derrick at Lucasfilm, Jerry Sekas over at Playside. And I started actually having a very small handful of friends in the industry. But it still took me until 38 when I was at Amazon, and I had already been at Amazon at AWS, and I was able to lateral into their Prime Gaming division. So it took me until, you know, the age of 38 to finally break into the industry. And there from then, the story is more straightforward. I was at Amazon Games as a BD person, strategy person. For a little while, I was even actually the producer for Amazon Games Montreal. And then now I'm at Tencent, where I'm a BD director there covering the Northeast, Canada, and a number of our other key accounts.
Awesome. Great. I love that. And interesting point you meant there. Actually, a couple of times you made that point of it just wasn't intuitive in terms of networking, and just thinking about, oh, I could go do this. And that's why I love going into schools, so whether it's elementary or I'm using American terms. For UK folks, it's primary, secondary, university, right? So I guess elementary, middle, high, whatever type of school it is. I like going in there. And the main thing I want them to come away from them from that is like, oh, I could get a job doing that. It's like, you know, no matter what I say and present to kids, is like, get them excited about the games industry and be like, yeah, there's jobs. And all you have to do is you get yourself educated and well, I say all you have to do. There's a lot to it, but at least step one is being like, I'm going to go try. So yeah, it just took a longer, I guess, to click for you in terms of thinking about that. Is that right?
That's right. And, you know, that's why this is very relevant, because over the last few days, I actually decided to make an in-depth series of posts on LinkedIn about this topic of networking. And it's interesting because I would have thought at a higher level, it would be like an easy winner for people to be like, yes, building relationships and networking is like a winner for everybody. And as we'll talk about later with data, I have hard data suggesting that it's anywhere from 14 to 20 times more likely to get a job in games if you have any kind of relationship with someone on the hiring team or the recruiting team. Now, when I presented this, and I have a lot of sympathy for this, by the way, a lot of people kind of reject it because I think maybe where they're coming from is they've been looking for a job for a while. They feel like they're doing all that stuff. And they're like, well, Amir, if that was the solution, it'd be a magic solution and everybody would have a job. And what I tell them is, no, nothing is a magic solution. But you should actually think about the reverse, which is even if you have a relationship, the odds are hard enough. If you don't have any relationship at all, the odds are nearly impossible. And I would say that the more junior you get, the more modest that relationship can be to be a difference maker. Maybe even having just had a coffee or like a lunch with someone on the team differentiates you versus someone who doesn't have that. Now, I don't think that's good or bad or in between. I just think it is a reality that I believe relationships matter. They're not a substitute for actually being a good fit, having the skills, having all this other stuff. But I've always thought of it as kind of like a ledger, and you're just taking one more thing that's on the positive side of the ledger for you versus everybody else.
Yeah, that's great. And I saw that post as well. My comment, but on that post was that in every company I've been in on the in-house side of recruiting, so that includes EA and Epic, you're always encouraged to give this like what I call white glove treatment to referrals. And there's a few reasons for that. One, like, you want to encourage referrals from your employees as much as possible. So if you're an employee and you refer like someone you really believe in, and then that whole experience sucks, like it was really hard for the employee to refer someone, that referral got ghosted or like had a really bad interview experience, that person's gonna be like, well, I'm not gonna refer all my other amazing friends. So you want them to keep doing that. So companies actually heavily incentivize referrals, that, you know, pay referral fees and things like that. So that was me piping up and being like, yes, companies actually actively encourage their own employees to refer people in. And the second point I say here, yeah, me and you, again, have the similarity in getting into the games industry. It took me from the day I was like, I'm going to get a job in the games industry, to the day I actually started the job was about 13 months. And in that 13 months, I remember the recruitment director for Riot Games was at a meetup group, and I was like, right, I'm in London. I was like, I'm going to go down there and speak to him in person, and nonstop messages on LinkedIn. But the point was, when that job eventually got advertised at EA, I'd already had a conversation with the recruitment manager there just briefly over LinkedIn. I was like, hey, it's me again. I would love for you to consider me like now, like straight away. And they did, and it went fast. And it's because I'd built that foundation.
I love that white glove comment you made. And it's also like, which I think I also said, like, and again, I say this with empathy because it's almost like there's different messages to different audiences. For those who are in it and looking now, you and I have different things we say. But I often say to those who have a job now, this is why I always say, like, think of it, if you have the financial luxury of doing so, think of this as a 6-month, 12-month, 18-month always process. Because if you're trying to build those relationships under the gun, it's very hard, and there are temptations to push too hard, and it feels transactional. Ideally, you're doing this over a long length of time. It's not transactional. It's real. It's two-way, and you're building real relationships, and any career considerations are almost an afterthought. That's when the real magic happens.
Yeah, that's perfect. And you've summed up the value and strategy of networking very well. And when networking is done right, you genuinely make friends. Like you said, how you got into the industry, you're like, oh, I they're my friends now. Like, you know, like you said, if it's disingenuous, it would just be transactional. I'm going to speak to this person so they can give me something. It's almost psychopathic, you know. But you're like, well, I'm going to network in the industry I love to like get to know people, and then I'll be able to help them out, and they'll be able to help me out, and everyone wins. Everyone rises together, right? I really like that mentality to your approach to networking. I'd love to also to hear more about like so this community you've built, right? And we're talking about now like helping others get jobs in the industry. How what has that experience been like? Like you've been gathering interesting data, you've been helping people find jobs alongside your main job. Like what has that experience been like?
Oh boy, Joe. I mean, as you know, this is one of the things I'm probably most passionate about in the world after like, you know, my family and friends. Well, let's maybe peel the onion a layer at a time. So I'm happy that we discussed my path before this, because where this community came from is kind of the two things meeting each other at the middle. One is all the backstory that I just shared with you of what I went through. And having had nearly 40 years to think about, well, what did I not have that I wish I could provide to others so they'll never be in the same position as me? And then the second thing was, which I've famously kind of told the story many times, but it bears repeating many times, is it was November of 22. And I had already been thinking about doing something like this at a small scale to have some helpful resources. I was good with like data, Excel, these types of things. And then before the really heavy cuts started coming in the beginning of 2023, a number of friends had been experiencing cuts in late 2022. And it was before the holidays, and I just had a very visceral reaction. You know, you picture in your mind being with your family at American Thanksgiving or for the holidays, and I pictured how I would feel. I've been unemployed once before, about a decade ago. How does it feel being at the holiday, feeling like that? And I said to my wife, I need to try to do something about this. And so the community started out as one resource, which is, I had never seen a resource the way I would want to look at games jobs as a job seeker, which is, I went to each community's page. There were 50 companies when we started back then. There's like 3,100 now. And I basically took every developer and publisher. It was mainly the big ones when I started. And what made it unique is, I scrape each individual page and clean the data in a kind of sophisticated way. So, and I know you've seen this, when you look at the workbook top down, you can see every developer and publisher in the world. And going across, you can see every one of 20 functional categories that I made. So it's almost like in a single pane of glass, you can see the entire games industry and all the jobs that are there. Then there were individual tabs. So if you were a candidate and you're like, I'm in audio, it would filter all of those. So you could just go da 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 from top to bottom and basically apply to every audio role by remote status and so forth. One more word I'll say about this is, even from the first moment, I tried to have a bit of a long-term vision that while there was a resource component to this, analytics and data would also be very powerful. And so something I built in from that very first moment is, I put a little individual tag on every single role in the workbook so I could see how long the roles are open, how long they close, and other stats like that. Make a long story short, that ended up expanding into now we have over 2,300 coaches who do like mentoring, CV reviews, mock interviews, and so forth. We've given away free tickets. We have general career resources. We have a major list where people can list themselves to be found by hiring managers and recruiters. Everything we've added has come from direct community feedback of what people wanted to see next that would actually help them. And I've had a number of instances, 6, 7, 8 instances where we have a resource and like it might look nice, but I have very hard data that I track on everything. And if I can't track it to actual impact of helping people, I cut the resource after some amount of time. And so these are kind of the main tenets of the community. What is actually working and helpful? Does it also generate data that I can then feed back the community for valuable insights about the industry? And three, simplicity. I don't have fancy like web pages. I don't use like SQL. I don't do like complex, whatever, multivariable calculus. Everything is meant to be in a way that's straightforward to use, straightforward to absorb. And I guess the last thing I'll say is we started originally just on LinkedIn. And so I was like hard posting all this stuff and links, which you remember, this was a few years ago. Then we added a website now with the help of my lovely friend Desiree, who did the amazing art and design there. And we also now have a Discord that has, you know, over 9,000 people too. So it had pretty humble beginnings, and I appreciate you letting me go a little bit at length there. But that's the whole thing in a nutshell.
No, that was really interesting you talking through that journey there. And you're right, like the job seekers, right? It's just how many websites does an average person look at or when they trying to find a job? It's like all the different job boards and LinkedIn and everything else. It's just like across various industries. And so just having that in one place and the resources as well, like that just that the free coaching, free mentoring. I was a mentor on there for a long time, and it was great to like jump on the call and feel like you're giving back and adding value to all these people. So that's fantastic. I was just wondering off the top of your head, like you've gathered all of this data, is there any like insights that stick out in your mind or anything that's been surprising at all since gathering this data?
Definitely. So I'll pick a few examples. You know, I think one thing that is interesting is as a result of all of this data, trust that I built with hiring managers and recruiters on situations, and also having a lot of data now from our community on people who are job seeking, I've been able to make like a closed circuit macroeconomic model actually projecting layoffs. And for second half of last year, you might recall, I started projecting this right after 4th of July. And the number that I initially projected for what the total layoffs in the industry would be ended up being 97.5% accurate to where we actually ended up the year. And so that's one interesting finding, being able to kind of try to anticipate layoffs. So that's one. The second one is some of the data on demystifying what the actual odds are of finding a job in games were a little bit shocking for people. Probably the one that gets mentioned a lot or I'm asked to talk about a lot at events is I found out that if you have less than 3 years of work experience and you are trying to apply to jobs as an entry-level person into games, your odds of finding a role in games over 12 months is only about 2-3%. It's lower than getting into Juilliard or Harvard or anything like that, Goldman Sachs, you know. It's just very, very competitive. Even though, or I beg your pardon, that's if you have less than 3 years of work experience and zero experience in games. So if you've never been in games before and you're trying to break in, it's just very, very tough. Even if you've been in the industry, the odds of finding a role over 12 months are like 25-30%. It's like 1 in 3. And the overall odds for everybody blended together is like 10-15%. So the bottom line is finally putting hard numbers on making clear to people that, look, that's over 1 year. If you hang in there for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and it's your dream, those numbers are not linear. They go up a lot if you hang in there and keep trying. But over a year, 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10 of you, you're going to have to find a job doing something else to put food on the table. So don't just apply to games and nothing else. Another interesting insight was, I've tried to talk a lot about ageism in our industry, and there's kind of an inverted U curve where if those odds that I mentioned to you are, you know, 2-3% when you have no experience in your early career, the odds go back to 2-3% when you're 50 or over. And so I believe that's a major problem. We could have a whole deep dive on that another day, but that is a very real thing in my opinion. One last stat I'll share is, I did the first ever full geographic mapping of where all open roles in the industry are and an individual role level by crawling every single company's site. And what was interesting about that is, one, when I overlap that with geographically mapping where all the layoffs have been as well, there's intense concentration of where roles are. As an example, in North America, 75% of the games jobs in North America are in just five metropolitan areas. A second example is over 50%, 53% of the layoffs that happened in 2024 were just in California. In terms of where these roles are being rehired, more than I think most people appreciate, it's really shifting out of North America to other places, parts of Europe, but also to Asia. As best as I can tell for data, as an example, is the last point I'll share. For the first time that I've ever been able to observe, if you take North America, Europe, and Asia, North America is third of those three in terms of where the open roles are, which has never been true before. So one thing that I caution people is that the market may actually be recovering, but it may not feel like that to you because the number of roles that you're seeing where you live may be more limited versus coming back in other places that are lower cost.
Wow, that is incredible. And what I also love as well when I've seen you post on LinkedIn is that I often say I'm an optimist, to my detriment sometimes. So when people are like, hey, Joe, what do you think the games industry is going to be like in 2025? I'm like, it's going to pick up. I'm feeling good about this. You know, if you asked me January last year, probably would have said the same thing. Probably would have said the same thing in 2023. You know, and what I like is that you're like, let's not, you often say this on LinkedIn and on in your community, let's deal with the facts before we let our feelings lead this discussion. So I love that you're doing that. With that, are there any data indicators for 2025 so far? Like the indicators that I've seen, this is more anecdotally, I guess, because I don't have the hard evidence, is an opening of investment dollars. And I see that because I work at a VC now. And both from investors and perhaps publishers and companies and things like that. And then the other is I've just seen an increase in recruiter job posts. Again, that's more anecdotally than hard data. And so with those, I'm like, are those precursors to growth? I'm curious. So with that data there, do you agree with those data points? I don't even know if you do. And secondly, is there anything out there that points towards a more optimistic year for 2025 or perhaps not?
Yeah, definitely. Well, look, I think it's always a mix, right? I love things like you said, and these are the types of conversations I have with people in our community all the time because I try to blend those observations with the numbers as well. And so I do agree with what you've said with a little bit of caution. It is funny. I've heard many funny nicknames that people have for me in the community. But yeah, people sometimes say I'm like the killer teddy bear because like the reason I can get away with like all these pills of like poison is that I do it with a genuinely positive attitude, which I do have, but I do try to be very honest. I will say this. I put out last night. Now, admittedly, as I mentioned, last year, I started projecting it mid-year. So obviously, there's going to be a much higher quality projection because I have a whole half years of data to go on. But a community request, and I told people just know, it's going to be lower accuracy, I'm certain. And I reproject this every week or every 2 weeks. I put out my first projection of what I think the layoff numbers will be for 2025. And what I projected was a number just south of about 10,000 layoffs. What that would mean, if my projection is correct, which I'm sure it won't be, or it'll have variations, a better year for layoffs than 2024, certainly. And a better year than 2023 by a little bit. So I think it'll be a better year, but not maybe quite out of the woods yet. But many people ask me all the time, Amir, what's the break-even point? And I always tell them, well, that depends what you want to define a break-even point as. I use the example of kind of like a pit or like a landfill or a pool or whatever you want to call it, which is that pit is like 35,000 jobs deep of cuts that have happened since 2022. And break even to me is, when are we net filling that pit versus digging it deeper? I thought that that was going to happen in December of last year, but I pushed that break even to this month. And I still believe it is this month because, even though I believe there will be a healthy number of cuts, because of that tracking that I mentioned to you, and now that I have 3,100 companies, I track every single job. There's 11,000, according to my math, which I think is accurate, 11,800 open jobs in the games industry worldwide. That number is flexed between about 12,000 and 14,000 over the past 6 months. But just that number isn't the important thing. What's important is the velocity of how fast those roles are being hired. And I'm encouraged by the fact that that velocity over the last 3 to 4 months, I can in fact confirm what you and many others have told me qualitatively, which is I do see hiring picking up a lot. And I see it picking up so much that, again, break even for me is over trailing 60 days, do I believe net hiring outpaces layoffs? And I believe by the end of this month, that will be true. So it's still a long road that we're going through, Joe, but I think it is slowly getting better. Now, I will caveat again what we said in the last question, which is the geographic reacquiry of those roles is not going to be the same as it was 1 or 2 or 3 years ago. So from a global perspective, I believe that's true, but experiences may vary, particularly for those of our friends who are in the North American market.
Yeah, just to recap that then, like you said, the North America, the five metropolitan areas, when you were saying that, I was like, oh, I'd love to guess those. So in my head, I was thinking San Francisco, LA, Seattle, Vancouver, Montreal. I guess my five.
Yes, that is exactly right. Very, very good. Except I group, I beg your pardon. I actually group all of California together at the state level. So it's everything you just said, California, Seattle, Vancouver, Montreal, and North Carolina. Because of Epic.
And, well, of course. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. So remind me then, what are those, that the geography shifts? That's really interesting. And also now being in the last year, being in the world of VCs, I'm now dealing with geographies that I hadn't been dealing with as much when I was on the AAA side. So for example, Istanbul and Tel Aviv, and speaking to more people now in Dubai and Singapore, even I've got an investment in Vietnam, naturally the bigger geographies are always there, like US, UK, etc. But it's so much more diverse, and these really talented teams coming out of much, I guess, cheaper but not less talented pockets of the world, which I love because it's democratizing. They're democratizing this industry and everything else. But remind me, what were those areas that are now, like, I guess, rising or like up and coming with hiring?
Yeah, absolutely. It's basically more affordable parts of Europe and more affordable parts of China. I would say that big magnets are places. China is definitely a big one. Places like Poland, some of the places you've also mentioned, like Vietnam and so forth. So yeah, I would say basically major hubs that would not surprise you within those markets that have solid developers and a reasonable cost profile.
Yeah. Yeah. I must say I find Poland pretty fascinating. When I was at Epic, I helped facilitate an acquisition they did there and then set up Epic Games Poland. Which is all public news, by the way, so I don't mind mentioning that. But then you've got these great AAA PC console studios out there, CD Projekt Red and Techland, People Can Fly, as well as a fantastic engineering science culture with their universities and stuff. So I tend to find that it's like these incredible countries that have fantastic, education, and they're cheaper. Like the key thing is they're cheaper, and then it's just like untapped innovative talent, and it's great to see those countries break through, and it means that people in those countries don't have to relocate away from their family and friends to get these opportunities, which is the, you know, it's the silver lining, I think, of that.
Definitely.
Yeah. Great. Hey, this was great. And such great data. I feel like I want to be diving so much more into this, but I tend to aim for our podcast episodes to be somewhere around 35 to 40 minutes. So there was so many great chunks of insights in there, and I can't wait to listen back and distill them all. So thanks so much. I do have, I do have one last question, but before we get to that last question, is there anything about everything you just said, is there any other, I guess, clarifications, any other points you wanted to mention before we get onto my closing question at all?
No, this is great, Joe. I would simply say that, as you said, I'm sure we could unpack a lot more. So, you know, happy to come back anytime to go deeper or go wider on anything we discussed. But it's been great.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, well, my closing question that I've asked everyone on this podcast so far is, what's your favorite interview question?
Yeah, I always like to ask people, what is something that you're doing outside your job that's an activity you're passionate about, that is a commitment that is involved with helping other people or doing something kind for other people? And I like to ask that because, one, I just love to hear about all the different things people are doing. For some, it's local, like doing something at a food bank. For some, it might be something like we do, like helping people on the internet or helping job candidates. And that's always fun to hear about. But also, in a gentle way, it's also a little bit of a reminder and an encouragement, which I also know that we both do, of trying to use a little bit of soft power to encourage other people to feel the confidence and to feel a calling to do something like that if they're not already.
Yeah. And a reason why I really like that question is I like interview questions that really get to the heart of a particular value. In this case, empathy, I think, is the key thing that we're tackling here, which is absolutely at the core to any sort of collaboration and finding just good people and finding good people to work with. So I guess a follow-up question for you there is, what would a great answer sound like to that? And what would a bad answer, as in like a red flag answer, sound like to that?
You know, interestingly, I would say that a good answer is one where I can genuinely feel, no matter what it is, that the person really has a conviction around what they're doing and that they're rolling up their sleeves in terms of their time and engagement, where they really have their two feet in terms of being engaged with that activity. I would say just having a little bit of energy, a little bit of passion, a little bit of color, that would make me very, very happy. Interestingly, I certainly don't think it's a red flag if someone says, I don't have something like that right now. I think that's understandable. People are busy. People don't have time. Maybe it's just something they hadn't thought about. The closest thing I can think of to a red flag, which I actually have heard as a response, is someone basically saying that they just like cut a check to something and they haven't kind of put in their own time to it. I wouldn't even say that's like a red flag, like it's really bad, but I think it is a less good answer. I like to hear that people are actually putting in their own time and effort into something and making connections with other people, because I have generally found that type of an involvement with something is more meaningful, feels richer, is more impactful. So maybe not red, but maybe light green flag.
Yeah, great. And you know what? This is the first time I've heard that question as an answer to this this favorite interview question that I ask on the podcast. But there is a theme with some others, and what I like is that you're trying to draw a passionate response from your whoever you're interviewing. And I love this take in a way to get into that, because you, like you said, could be anything, right? Like however you're helping anyone in any capacity, cool, could be a work related answer, or you could be, you know, I don't know, like teaching someone a Dungeons and Dragons or whatever.
Anything.
And then you get to see, when you talk to someone who's passionate about something, they can really talk to you about it, and it's really genuine. And then it makes for a much more interesting conversation and diving into how their brain works and what makes them tick and all these things. Fantastic question to just unlock that. I think the best interview question to do that, to get people excited to talk about themselves and about the value they add and everything else. So
nice. Especially because, in like 2025 or 2024, whatever you like, I feel like increasingly, a lot of times I see candidates who feel like in an interview, they can't really be passionate about anything that is kind of authentic to themselves. Everything has to be like appropriate. Everything has to be like perfect because they're under so much pressure. I also like this because it kind of creates a little bit of a firewall between something that's like work related and professional. So maybe it even induces them further to kind of like let their hair down a little. Or in my case, non-existent hair. They're bald. They're baldness.
Hey, no comment. No comment. I love that. Amir, oh my goodness, I've absolutely loved this. I particularly loved the really actionable insights and data that you brought to this conversation, as well as just chatting to someone else who loves games and loves being in the games industry. And hey, you're being recognized for it. And there's a vocal majority who love it. A massive thanks for that, and really appreciate your time and coming on here. So yeah, I guess thank you. We've come to the end. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe. This was really, really great. And I hope folks really get something out of it. And I thank you for everything you do. You're a major, major light too. And everybody knows it and appreciates it. And thanks, my dude.
Thank you. Bye-bye.